How will the world meet growing energy demand while reducing emissions? What technology, human capital, policy, and education is needed to making the energy transition a reality? What are the myths and hard truths about all forms of energy, our environment, and our economy? The Voices of Energy sets out to explore these questions with the people at the heart of making these changes a reality. We'll go from conversation to application by focusing on actionable strategies that will drive the world and our industry into a new era. I'm Katie Maynard, founder and CEO of Ally Energy, and this is the Voices of Energy. I'm Katie Maynard with the Voices of Energy podcast, and today we are joined by Kimberly Border, who is an advisor of talent management, diversity, and inclusion at Ovintiv. Ovintiv is a hydrocarbon exploration and production company founded in Calgary, Alberta, and is headquartered in Denver, Colorado. Under its previous name, Encana was the largest energy company and largest natural gas producer in Canada. Kimberly is an inclusive and collaborative leader with experience in organizational and leadership development, change management, planning, and HR advisory work. She is passionate about development and coaching and is an Erickson certified professional coach. In preparing for this episode, as we chatted with Kimberly, we discovered her passion for the upcoming generation of engineers, scientists, and talent coming into the energy workforce, as well as scrubbing the stigma attached to the oil and gas industry, or the big, bad, scary oil companies, as we all know, and the emerging realization that you can be an environmentalist and work in energy. Can't wait to dive into that one. Welcome, Kimberly.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
So glad to have you. So today's topic is near and dear to my heart, as you know. We love talking about workforce, and we obviously love talking about energy, because energy is what powers modern life. So before we get started, we love to start every episode with a little bit of fun, an icebreaker of sorts, to get to know you a little better. So my first question for you is, where is somewhere interesting or off the beaten path that you have traveled to?
You know, this is an interesting question. I've recently been thinking about how fortunate I've been to have the opportunity to travel to 20 different countries in 5 continents. And so I could answer this question many ways. I think probably the most place I've been that's off the beaten path is a small island called Gili Terowongan. And Gili is, it's actually 3 islands. Terowongan is the biggest island off the northwest coast of Lombok in Indonesia. So a couple boats to get there. And when I went, which was many, many years ago, it was very remote, very untamed and natural. And it was just a really interesting place to be.
Nice. So what's next on your travel bucket list besides Houston, of course?
Well, that's an interesting question. My in-laws live in England, so likely England. I would love to go back to Hawaii, Iceland, and Eastern Canada are probably some of my favorites and do-overs that I would like to do again.
Awesome. Well, let's get into you a little more. So tell me a little bit more about you, your background, and how you came to work at Ovintiv.
You know, my background is a little bit interesting. I didn't grow up wanting to be in human resources or work in the oil and gas industry. My dad did work in the oil and gas industry for a period of time, so I was familiar with it. But actually, out of school, I went to work at a manufacturing plant, injection molding plastics. So we did phone parts for Nortel. And through that, you know, I worked in quality control, and I started to help out someone who was overwhelmed doing some payroll and HR, and really got interested in the profession that way. Went to school and got my first job in the oil and gas industry, and have worked at various producers as well as midstream companies. Had a little stint in there where I went traveling, as well as lived and worked in England for a couple of years. And then when I came back to Calgary, really just, again, picked up in the energy industry and worked at various oil and gas companies. Had an opportunity at the time to join Encana, which is our former name, and have been there for 11 years, really doing a broad swath and diverse roles in HR.
Awesome. So obviously, you said you weren't destined for HR, but became an HR person. So where did your passion for people come from, and what drew you to diversity and inclusion in this space?
Yeah, I think like Brené Brown says, we are all hardwired for connection. And even though I'm an introvert at heart, I do like to be around people. What I get jazzed about is even contributing just a small bit to somebody's growth and development and watching them realize their potential and succeed. That's what gives me a sense of satisfaction and accomplishment. And as I look at the industry, there's a lot of opportunity to ensure that we have the most welcoming industry, the most welcoming company for all. You know, I think, quite frankly, it's not something we've focused on in the past. And like I said, there's a lot of opportunity and growth that we can realize as an industry in that space of DE&I.
Well, that's why we love working with you. As you know, DE&I is really important to us. We've added a fourth letter onto that, justice. So now I guess it's JEDI or EDIJ anyway. But you know, that leads me to our topic for today, which is looking at talent and energy and the upcoming generation in the workforce. You know, we could probably have a conversation for days about millennials, Gen Z, my daughter is a Gen Z, and how they are different from a talent management perspective. I don't know that I want to get into that. What I really want to get to talking about with you is cultivating a culture, an evolving culture of students and young professionals interested in energy and helping them to realize that there are so many careers, not just jobs, right, in the industry. So my question to you first is, what kind of candidates are you seeing right now? And what's standing out in the marketplace when it comes to attracting the next generation of talent?
Yeah, this is an interesting question again, because as I think about my time in oil and gas and over the years, you know, probably it was about 8 years ago, there was a real dip in the economy and in oil and gas in general. And we saw it come back. We saw candidates come back to the industry, apply for jobs. And traditionally, oil and gas has been a pretty high payer and great benefits, which has served us well in attracting talent. I think the ground has shifted. I really think that this isn't a period that, well, it will just come back. Candidates will come back to our industry. I think the social justice movements, the social commitments that candidates are now demanding of employers are different. And I think that has shifted the foundation. And so what we're seeing is more competition for talent, especially in those functions that are non-oil and gas. So traditionally, we haven't had a real big challenge in recruiting for IT or accounting or finance or legal, those types of professions. We're now seeing more challenge in attracting and recruiting that talent, and also in our technical talent, because I think younger talent is having the mindset of, why would I go into an industry that I don't know if they're going to be around in 20 years when I graduate and when I'm really in the prime of my career? And so we're seeing some challenges in that. We have also pretty big competition from tech companies who are now hiring engineers where they never used to hire engineers. We have the aerospace industry who is building their own talent pipeline. And so we have competition, and it's, I think what we're seeing too is candidates know what they want and they're not afraid to ask for it. Some of the questions we get around culture, the questions we get around hybrid remote work, those are questions candidates are asking upfront before they even come for an interview. So I think it's just interesting that people know what they want now, and I don't know that they're willing to compromise. And people's value proposition has shifted somewhat. And compensation and benefits is absolutely a table stakes thing for people, but there's so much more people are looking for. And so they're asking those more difficult questions of companies. And so, yeah, we're having to do some different things and use some different strategies to attract talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting you talk about this because I think we've seen it too, obviously. And one of the reasons why I even started this was, you know, the perception around oil and gas as a job opportunity. And you and I both know, being in this industry, and obviously, you know, your dad being in the industry, my father was in the industry too, that these jobs are great paying jobs and they're wonderful opportunities to help drive the energy future forward. And I know we have tons of challenges ahead of us. I'm kind of curious, are students scared that the jobs will be gone in the future because of the transition? Or is it something else? Obviously, you mentioned tech, and the tech industry right now is actually getting slaughtered. So in some ways, I feel like there's an opportunity to maybe go grab some of that talent, that experienced talent. We're starting to see shifts in the market. But what do you think the challenges or the worry is or concern might be from students or younger professionals as they enter this industry?
Yeah, it's a great question. I do think there is somewhat of a mindset out there that it's an industry, you know, I don't want to touch because it's just unstable. And what has worked for us is actually a little bit more personalized engagement with students. So, you know, let's have a conversation. It's one conversation at a time around, here's what our industry is doing. Here's what our company's doing. You know, they're asking questions about our emissions strategy. And so we're talking about that. They're asking questions about our social commitments to, you know, how do we support our communities? How do we have Indigenous partnerships? What is our company doing in diversity, equity, and inclusion? So we're having those conversations and it is making a difference. But I also think what we're having a conversation around is, hey, there's this perception of oil and gas that it's dirty work, it's turning wrenches, it's a lot of physical heavy labor. And that's just not the case anymore. We've evolved as an industry. And sure, there's still some of that, but a lot less of that. And so we're talking about the technology that exists in oil and gas, the innovation that exists, and the opportunity to come into an industry and an organization where it's not just a job, but you can have a career. So, you know, there's lots of entry-level positions. So take, for example, a field position as a lease operator. You can come in as an entry-level lease operator, you can learn and grow. You can choose to take some additional education. You can progress your career. And you can advance either within that function. You can move into leadership to be a coordinator or superintendent. Or you can move even into more of a technical trade, like an automation lift technician, as an example. And so I think there's so many opportunities. And it's truly earning, you know, a great wage, good benefits to raise a family with. But the world's your oyster, really. There's so many opportunities. And even if you come into the office, you know, I've just shared an example about the field, but they're using technology and iPads. And it's just not what we think of when we think of traditional oil and gas, or, you know, even when our parents maybe worked in there. And so it is really different. And you don't have to be physically strong necessarily to be successful and have a career in production operations.
Well, so we're talking about this, about, you know, getting students into oil and gas. Let's talk a little bit prior to coming into oil and gas. Where are you seeing, you know, from an education perspective, college, perhaps even high school? I might even shudder to say middle school. My daughter, Allie, is in the sixth grade. And when I looked at the science curriculum, and we live in the energy capital of the world, when I looked at her science curriculum recently, I was really disappointed in what I saw. I didn't see what I would have expected in energy education. So what do you see might be lacking from programs and degrees that might be able to encourage more of the workforce entering into oil and gas and encouraging, obviously, diversity in that workforce?
Yeah, I think that at the middle school and high school, it's educators having a balanced view of energy. Calgary too is a big energy capital of Canada. And I think sometimes the sentiment that my kids come home from school with or in the community around oil and gas, it's not a very balanced view. And I hope that educators take more of a balanced view. And for example, you know, in school, my kids are learning, they're in grades 4 and 7, and they're learning a lot about the difference between fact and opinion. And they have assignments where they have to look at statements and say, what's a fact and what's an opinion? And so a lot of it is opinion-based and not necessarily fact-based. And so I try and talk to people around, everybody can have an opinion, absolutely, but what are the facts? And let's make sure that we're considering all the facts when we draw our own conclusions or opinions. So I think that's a big role for educators to play in high school. And then when I think about how do we prepare kids for what comes after high school, there's a lot of pressure to go to, you know, a university and get a 4-year degree or even go on to get a master's. And somewhere along the way, we've lost sight that there is huge value in these 1 or 2 year degrees or diplomas or certificates, whatever, you know, we may call them, but in the technical areas and the trade areas, and that is just as important and valuable as a 4-year degree. And so I think we need to talk to our kids about that you're just as much a contributing member of society with that than you are with a 4-year degree from a university. So talking about those options and more balanced thinking, I think is what we can do. And also talking about transferable skills. So if kids are shying away from oil and gas because they think it's, you know, a dying industry, what are the transferable skills that you will learn if you go into a job in that industry? You know, thinking about the innovation, the technology, you know, that kind of thing, the project management, the life skills you learn aren't going to go away. And those are transferable to any industry and to most jobs. So hoping that we see more of the bigger picture than just our narrow thinking around what is our opinion on the oil and gas industry and really broaden our perspective.
Yeah, you know, thanks for bringing that up. I actually, in my role here in the U.S. as a Department of Energy ambassador, one of the things I'm trying to do is to get the grown-ups to agree on what's fact. And I think we can all agree, I mean, please speak up if I'm putting words into your mouth, but I think we can all agree that we want clean air and we want clean water and we care about the environment, but the fundamentals are true at the end of the day. Right now, oil and gas is a large part of what we use on a day-to-day basis. Clearly, right, those emissions are harming our planet, but there's a lot of efficiency and a lot of innovation in the next few decades as we sojourn to this, you know, notion of 2050 and net zero. There's a lot of work to be done to get there. And so, yeah, I think you're right. When kids hear from the media or from educators or from parents for that matter, right? When they hear from the adults, these messages, it does not help the industry, right? Attract and recruit talent. I will say this too. One of the numbers we're seeing that's alarming is that even the renewables industry is struggling to hire. And it is because kids, parents, everyone likes their phones. Everyone likes their tech, right? Everyone likes money. So Wall Street markets, you know, government, all of these finance, all of these degrees or all of these options in the workplace are exciting. But at the end of the day, what powers modern life is what we do day in and day out. So you're right. We've got to reach kids and we've got to reach them with the right messages. So speaking of which, this kind of brings me to the point, you know, you had said once that you can be an environmentalist and still work in oil and gas. Tell us a little bit about what you're thinking there. I have my opinion, obviously. I think that's kudos to you for saying, but what are you thinking when you said you can work in oil and gas and still be an environmentalist?
Yeah, absolutely. you can be part of the change. And in fact, we need people who are environmentalists, who think differently. And that's really about getting that broad, diverse perspectives, because that's what leads to innovation. When you can create an inclusive culture where diverse perspectives are able to speak up, it leads to innovation. And we need innovative solutions to figure this challenge out. Absolutely, I would invite those people to consider a career in oil and gas, because change from the inside is very powerful. And we need people to be part of the solution, because if we just continue to think the same way we've always thought, we'll get the same results. And so this is about engaging diverse perspectives, diverse backgrounds, to come up with unique solutions to this energy challenge. So when someone's like, I care for our environment and therefore I can't work in oil and gas, I would ask someone to not think either or and think both and. So how can I not be so polarized in my thinking? And can I believe two things at once? Can I believe that there needs to be a transition in our energy mix? And can I really care about our environment and what we're doing with the climate? Absolutely, you can believe in both of those things at the same time. And so I think we need these people to be part of the solution and be part of the conversation, so that we're not just talking in an echo chamber, which is not good for anybody.
Right. Well, you know, Kimberly, I love what you say about this, because we can be a part of the change. Before COVID, gosh, that seems so long ago, I wrote a piece out in Newsweek, and it was why big oil should hire activists like Greta Thunberg. And I think Greta, and I think a lot of these climate activists get a bum rap because they're marching, they're upset, we get it, right? But why don't we get these folks into our labs and into the field and start digging into how we can solve the problem. So I'm absolutely with you. I tell people we need activists too, right? We can be environmentalists. We can be all kinds of ists, right? Mm-hmm. In this industry, because at the end of the day, it is an energy transition. We've been in an energy transition for centuries, right? And it's no different here. I think it's just that we're living in a time where misinformation and information is abundant. And so a lot of times that's what can hold us back, which is what obviously we've been talking about. So as we wrap up, a final question we're asking our guests: what is something you wish people asked you that you never seem to get the chance to talk about?
I think it's a little bit about what I just said about the both and thinking and not be polarizing. Like, so for example, you know, I've worked in the oil and gas industry for most of my career, which, you know, has been about 20 years. And I recently purchased a Tesla. So in August, we purchased a Tesla, and I still believe in the industry, but I can believe both of those things. I can hold space for both of those things, that I know that I can't completely go one way or the other, but it's a mix. And I think what you said about engaging people in this conversation, it's almost similar to the approach like we've taken internally around DE&I, is let's have a conversation, but let's not blame and shame anybody for where we're at. Let's just open the dialogue and understand what the solution needs to be. Because I think when you do point fingers at others, then it just causes defensiveness. And I think one term I actually learned from Ally was the radical middle. And I think there is such an opportunity for that in today's world. And, you know, the pandemic has been I call it the great accelerator. It has accelerated everything, good, bad, and indifferent. And so, you know, can we accelerate that radical middle and really start to have some insightful conversations with different perspectives around the table?
So you took it one level further. So it's the rational middle, but you're calling it the radical middle. And yeah, you know what? I agree. It's the same thing. Because at the end of the day, we need a middle ground. We've got to get the extremes right from both sides to say, you're both welcome here. Now let's get a little bit closer, right? So that we can solution and not be so polarized. Look, I could talk to you about this all day. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for joining us today. Kimberly with Ovintiv. If people want to check out opportunities, you can go to allyenergy.com and get a profile. Ovintiv has a number of jobs on our website. We want to thank you so much for joining us on the Voices of Energy podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.